This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm joined again by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we've got three sponsors for the show. Firstly, Jam Software, makers of enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technology such as Macs, iPad, iPhone and Apple TV in education. More about them at jamsoftware.com. Secondly, Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms. Shobi makes it easy to assign, collect and review student work and to provide rich feedback with annotations, voice notes and more. And finally, Aerohive unleashes the power of enterprise mobility. Aerohive's technology enables organizations of all sizes to use mobility to increase productivity, engage customers, and grow their business. We'll tell you more about all of those as the show goes on. Ping, ping, Bradley, tapping you on the wrist.
Sending you a heartbeat.
Ah. yeah, so it's Apple Watch Day, or it's we're recording this Monday the 27th, which is the first Monday after some Apple Watches came on Friday. Mine didn't, actually. We'll talk about that in a minute. But how's yours getting on?
It's good. I think I mentioned I went with the stainless steel with the black sport band. And okay. I was really nervous that it wasn't going to get here. And then I was leading church Wednesday night, had an email from Apple saying that they had a problem with my American Express card and could not charge it. And of course, I'm thinking, oh gosh, not again. Because this happened with my iPhone.
Back of the line.
Yeah, exactly. Happened with my iPhone. And so I called Apple. I called American Express and got it dealt with. I called Apple. And it turns out they were pre-authorizing the charge. And so it wasn't about the ship kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I got it dealt with. Oddly enough, I used Apple Pay to pay for it. And that's what's odd, that it had a problem. Yeah. Now, since then, I switched phones. And I don't think that should matter, though, because it already generated the token.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, if you have a kind of long-running transaction like that where you ordered it on one phone and you potentially change phones before the next stage of the transaction happens. Yeah,
that's the only thing I could think that happened. And so got it taken care of, and they handled, but didn't lose my spot in line, and it shipped out on Thursday. My UPS runs about 6 o'clock PM and I actually got it about 3. So it came a little bit early and yeah, had it for a few days now.
Great.
So yes, black sport band, stainless steel watch.
And your sport band is okay. There's been sort of rumors online that the black sport bands are suffering from delamination problems and flaking of the surface material and so on. Yours is okay?
Yeah, so far I had not even heard that. That's the first I'm hearing of that. So, no problems.
The speculation I'm hearing, based on the fact that it seems like a lot of black sport band models, including the stainless steel one, have not shipped yet. But I don't know. There might be something. Maybe they've discovered something. I don't know. But we'll see. I ordered the black sport model, the black body, black band sport model. Because I ordered 1 minute after everybody else, 8:03 a.m. instead of 8:02, mine is not due to arrive for quite a long time. Fortunately, though, my sister, God bless her, did actually receive her Apple Watch on launch day and played with it and used it for a while. And then she very generously offered to lend it to me for a few days. So I've been wearing her 42mm green banded sport watch since Saturday morning. It's now Monday evening, and I'm super impressed with it. Yeah. We'll get into all the details, I'm sure, but it's very happy with this as well.
Yeah, I think, I went out of town this weekend, so it was actually a great time to use it because we went out of town for my wife's birthday, and some friends went with us, and it was not a place where I was going to be at my desk. We were really just lounging around on the couch where I could kind of tinker. Mm-hmm. And so it really gave me an idea of how it actually works in real life and how it's meant to work.
Yeah, I spent most of the weekend just playing with it. I mean, I didn't have very much else going on over the weekend. It's quite a quiet weekend, so I managed to kind of ruin the battery by 6 or 7 o'clock every evening just by twiddling with it so much, installing new apps, trying different things, reconfiguring and so on. So I haven't really had I don't think I've had a fair test of the battery life just yet. But each of those days, I put it on to charge for maybe 10 minutes in the evening, and then it was good until bedtime. So I'm quite confident the battery life is going to be a day once you sort of stop fiddling with it. But you're having the classic problem that you feel the same way about your new iPhone as well. Oh, the battery life isn't great because I can't stop fiddling with it for about the first 3 or 4 days. You're constantly doing stuff with it. So I think once we all get into the kind of normal way of using the Apple Watch, I think the battery is going to be just fine.
Yeah, I think the rationale that I kind of have gone through my head is don't try to do things on the watch that the phone is better for. Mm-hmm. And so don't try to dictate a very long text message if it is going to be easier. If you're sitting there on the couch, just pull your phone out. And I think those are the situations where the battery, you know, things like that over the course of a day might cost you 20% of the battery. Mm-hmm. And so I think, again, if you're like, you shouldn't be staring at your wrist for a minute. Like these should be second long, a few seconds, glances here and there, you know, dictating a message with Siri, checking delivery status with your deliveries app. You know, again, very different things. But if it's going to be something you're actually going to like do for 3 to 4 minutes, whip out your phone or grab your iPad or grab your computer.
Yeah, and the thing I discovered, you know, on the Saturday when I first had it and I was doing everything on it, the thing I discovered, and I suppose it's not that surprising, was that the physical sort of effort required to hold your hand up in the way you would look at a watch for that length of time is actually quite substantial. You know, my left shoulder started to feel it after a little while, and it seems like a silly thing to say, like, oh, you can't hold your arm up for that long, but you know, your arm's not designed to be held, you know, straight out from your shoulder for that long. So that's why we invented keyboards and desks and things like that. So I felt like, you know, physically it's not going to be either possible or desirable to spend a lot of time interacting with the watch, much more, you know, short interactions and so on. But I think one of the things I found when I first started using it, and it's still true, is that at the moment, your interactions are forced to be quite long because everything is quite slow. And, you know, we talked about this in previous times, that the Verge's article, the Verge's Apple Watch review, is one of the few that actually called out performance as problematic. And I think perhaps more should have called out performance as being a little bit difficult right now. However, I also think that, you know, we've got to be realistic and say that, you know, 95% of all developers, if not 99% of all developers who've shipped an Apple Watch app so far, have never run their app on the actual watch. And I think once people have done that and they start to see the performance profile of the watch properly, then a lot of optimizations are going to come out very soon for these apps. And that will actually change quite substantially the way in which, the extent to which the watch is useful. I don't know if you've noticed any apps in particular being bad at picking up quickly, Bradley.
Well, it's no one particular app, but it'll be apps at various times. So, like, because I'm about 40% battery today, and it's almost 4 o'clock. And this is actually, I was at 40% when I went to bed last night. But I've tinkered with it more today as people at work have wanted to see it.
Yeah.
But like, someone was wanting to see, hey, what does Instagram look like? And it just like took it like 15 seconds to load. But then the next time, it took 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And I don't understand the rhyme or reason.
Well, I'm guessing that it's doing the same thing that the iPhone and the iPad do, which is to aggressively conserve memory for the active application by ejecting less recently used applications from memory. So what you're seeing is that 15-second startup is Instagram loading from storage, and then the 2-second startup is Instagram resuming from RAM. And I think also what we're seeing is a lot of developers haven't really optimized their memory profiles for the Apple Watch hardware either. So whenever you launch another app, it's probably loading up, doing too much work possibly, and loading up too much stuff for performance and using up memory, so, and therefore ejecting other apps. So being a much more efficient citizen in terms of RAM usage as well as time usage is going to be something that a lot of developers, I think, should focus on for the next version.
Yeah, it's actually, I had to use it in the classroom today. It was nice. I was teaching. I got a text message, looked down. It was another teacher asking when my class was over. I responded back with Siri and said, 2:10, and hit send and good to go. I did turn off where it like asks you the option to do the dictation or audio memo, just because I will use dictation almost every time.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, that since iOS 8 shipped, I don't really think, maybe other people have, but I haven't gotten into using the voice dictation, not the voice dictation, but the kind of voice memo feature of messages. I'm still typing. So maybe that'll be something that'll come. I can see myself using it occasionally, you know, when, you know, if I'm in a very noisy environment or something and the dictation can't get it right, I might prefer to send an audio message, but not so far. Yeah.
Did you get AppleCare on your Apple Watch?
I did, yeah. And the reason being that I suspect, you know, I look at my Pebble, which is just about a year old, and it is chipped and scratched and everything. And, you know, I was also going to get the black sport watch, and I've had the black iPhone and different things, and that finish didn't seem to be super durable. So I'm thinking, you know, AppleCare Plus, you know, if I have a catastrophic scrape off a wall or something, then I can get that fixed for not too much money. So I did go for AppleCare Plus on the watch.
I called and added it on Saturday, like $70, for the same, roughly the same reason. I normally don't buy AppleCare, and I don't even know if I would buy it, like, if I bought another watch in 2 years, if I would buy AppleCare again. Mm-hmm. It's just, since it's a completely new product, I don't know for sure, like, how that's gonna work.
Yeah. And it's not that much money either, is it? You know, it's not like buying AppleCare for your laptop or whatever, you know, $200, $250 or whatever.
Right. Yeah, it's you know, $69, and then you have the $79 like deductible.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the biggest thing with the stainless steel is not that it will scratch, but that you might shatter it, because apparently the sapphire screens are more prone to shattering. But again, I probably won't use it, and I probably just spent $70 for nothing. But hey, better than having to buy a new watch or to not have one.
True. I think, to be honest with you, even after having just used it for a couple of days, I really think that people who really, you know, get into using the Apple Watch are going to very quickly find it an indispensable part of their life. I don't think there's going to be many people who get it and set it up properly who will not want to keep it and keep having new versions. So I think it's going to become an interesting and useful part of everybody's life.
So what are some of your favorite apps so far?
Before I tell you my favorite apps, I think what I wanted to suggest was that there's something about the design of certain Apple Watch apps that makes them really great. And I think I figured out what it is, and it's that those apps do not require you to pre-configure the information that you want to see on your wrist. And this is quite a subtle design challenge for developers, but it's one that some developers have really nailed, even for version one, and other developers have not quite so much. And a couple of good examples, right? OmniFocus, which I'm a huge OmniFocus fan, but their app basically just gives you which tasks are overdue, which ones are due today, which ones are due soon, and then it shows you the flag tasks, your inbox, and it lets you sync one perspective from the phone. So there's one piece of information you can sort of set up yourself, and then the rest is kind of automatic, and it does an excellent job of just showing you the things that are sort of most important right now. I mean, you're not going to sit and do your review for the week on your Apple Watch, but, you know, I use a lot of to-dos. You know, I have my classes in OmniFocus as to-dos for that day, and they come due when the class starts and so on. And it's really great. Just as the bell goes, my watch will ping, and I'll see which class is coming in next, and I can just tick right on the thing. I can say, well, that's done. Okay, because that class is about to start. So just getting that information to your wrist at the right time is a real high-quality feature of the best Apple Watch apps. And I think just one example that doesn't really do a great job right now is 1Password. And what they do in 1Password is you have to go into 1Password on the phone, and you have to pick the accounts and the objects in 1Password that you want to be in 1Password on your watch. And, well, I don't know what I want to have in my watch. You know, I've got all kinds of things in there. You know, I've got my passport number, I've got various passwords, I've got, you know, membership numbers for various things. And I don't want to have to go and, like, pre-configure on my phone what I get on my watch if I'm going to, you know, the climbing wall or something. So I get my member number for that organization there, and then my membership number for something else over there. And I don't want to have all, you know, do I just put everything on the phone, on the watch? No. So I think there's a bit more work to be done there. Evernote does a good job of that. They show you, I think it's the 5 most recently used notes and any that have recently been created. And then you can use dictation to search as well, which is pretty powerful. So there are some apps doing a really good job of that, and other apps, not quite so much. But those are two of my favorites. Yep.
Yeah, the only thing I struggle with on Evernote, like I have my teaching schedule, and like it just doesn't, it cuts off one of the last lines of it. I haven't figured that out yet. It's odd.
Yeah, these are the kind of 1.0 bugs that people haven't quite figured out yet.
Yeah, I mean, I really love, there's an app I've been trying called Dataman. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Nope.
But it's an app that, because the developer emailed me, and he's like, hey, I've got this new new Apple Watch app update for my app. It's called Dataman Next. It has Dataman Pro as well. And what it is, it's an app that runs on your phone that basically tells you your cellular, where you are on your cellular quota. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I immediately said, like, how are you doing this? Like, is it a proxy server? Like, how are you tracking this? And he said, no, like, we're actually just reading the information that's, like, in the settings app in terms of, like, how much you've used. And so we are able to better, it kind of real time, tell you where you're at in your quota compared to your cellular provider, which might be a day or two delayed. Mm-hmm. And basically, like, the app is extremely simple. You launch the app on the phone, and it shows you basically where you're at for the month. So you just go in there and you set up, so okay, I have 30 gigs of quota this month. My date resets on this day, and then you're kind of off and running. And it's one of those apps that you on the iPhone that's like almost doesn't do anything. It's like mm-hmm. when you launch it, it literally just says 30%, 15 days left. And it just tells you your forecast is set. Like you don't appear you're going to be going over. Well, it's extremely simple. And to me, that's the kind of app that like is almost like a better watch app than it is an iPhone app. Because mm-hmm. I launched the app, and it just says safe, 30% use, and it's in green. And that's all it does.
Yeah,
I can swipe over, and it shows me that basically I've used 3 gigabytes. I have 7 left. I set it up as I did 10 gigs a month with our plan. I kind of divided it up by 3. And I have 15 days left. And it's extremely simple, but it's about giving that information rather quickly without having to, again, find the app, open it up. And again, it's almost too simple as an iPhone app. And this is the kind of app that is just, to me, perfect as an Apple Watch app.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more and more of that kind of thing happen. Or, apps that maybe actually get more powerful on the phone can stay simple on the watch. So you can see, I can imagine some situations where an app would, which has been quite basic on the phone, could get more powerful, but the sort of simple essence of it could remain as a watch app while the phone becomes kind of more of a master system. A couple more apps I really like on the watch. One that's built in is the Photos app. And this is something that a lot of people sort of said, well, what on earth is the point of that when Apple showed it off when the watch was first announced? But just having a few little photos on your wrist I just think it's absolutely charming, and it's one of my favorite things. The other thing that I found today when I was at work was the ability to action emails as they come in. It was really, really useful to me. Basically, so much mail comes through in the day that you have to sort of just be aware of. You've seen it, but you don't want to necessarily do anything with it. So I was able to just, when the notification comes in, you just scroll the crown up, and as you go down the message, I was surprised you could actually pretty much read the whole message in the notification. Then at the bottom, you've got buttons for flag, mark as unread, and archive. So I'm, scrolling down the emails, archiving them, and just keeping my inbox really nice and empty across the course of the day. So it's really useful for things like that, where secretary sending out emails saying, this kid's gone home sick or whatever. And it's good to be aware of that, obviously, but I don't necessarily want to, have to, when I get back to my Gmail, just go through and clear out all those messages. So it's great to just be able to look at that, get rid of it straight away on the spot. So those are kind of my four favorite ones: OmniFocus, Evernote, Mail, and Photos.
Evernote and OmniFocus are two big ones for me. Love the music app, and I guess I kind of pair the music app, Overcast, and Runkeeper together. Mm-hmm. So one of the things on Saturday, I love to go for either go to the gym, workout, or go for a run. So I use like a running pouch. It's not a fanny pack; it's a running pouch to put my phone in. Don't laugh. And I'm weird. I like to change songs. I don't make playlists. I like to change albums. I'll move to podcasts. I'll move to an audiobook. Mm-hmm. And so now, of course, Audible doesn't have a watch app just yet. But like, I can use Siri and say, "Play Imagine Dragons," and I get my Bluetooth headset running in. And I don't have this music paired to my phone. Mm-hmm. It's coming off. I don't have this music paired synced to my watch. It's playing off my phone to my Bluetooth headset, and it works just fine. Even mid run. Overcast has podcasts. It's fantastic. Literally just starting the show is all I really need to do. And the fact that I can do so much of it from Siri related to the music app is fantastic. And again, I mentioned once Audible comes out with an app, I can play an audiobook. Mm-hmm. I'll bounce back and forth, and I've never had to get my phone out. And as dumb as that sounds, like, these are those situations when the watch is so perfect.
Yeah. Like, I had a situation like that this morning. I like to listen to podcasts in the shower. And I have like a Bluetooth speaker and whatever. But there always comes this point where You know, I turn the volume up quite loud so that I can hear it over the shower. But then when I turn the shower off, suddenly it's blaring loud and it wakes up all the kids and stuff. So the watch is, in one sense, it's kind of like a waterproof remote control for the phone. So you can go into the, there's a glance for the music, the now playing glance it's called. And one of the little tricks with that is you can actually roll the crown to increase and decrease the volume. Don't know if you picked that up, but that's a really nice way to just quickly change the volume coming off your phone. And that I thought initially, I thought that only worked for the music app, but in fact it works for anything that's playing on your phone. So it's kind of, it's like the equivalent of, you know, the lock screen volume and transport controls for whatever you're listening to. That also goes to your watch as well. So that was another example of, you know, just controlling your world from your watch. And I think that's going to become more of a thing, but it has to be a fast thing. And this is something that I think is a little bit lacking right now, is that sometimes you'll try things and it's so slow you would have been twice as quick to do it the old-fashioned way. But, you know, as we know with all things in technology, speed over time is a problem that gets solved.
Another one I really like is the deliveries app. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it's funny. Now, next time I get an Apple Watch, I can track it from this Apple Watch. You know,
well, I'm actually tracking my Apple Watch on my sister's Apple Watch.
That's true. And I've got a watch coming in for an employee we have here. And so I've got, it says it's processing. But yeah, it's really nice to be able to just go in there. You do the force touch to refresh it, and you can tap on it and get some more information. It works really well. Again, it's glancing. You're just like, I'm not going to stay on that app for long. You just want to see if anything's changed. Mm-hmm. I do love the phone calls app. I use that in the car quite a bit this weekend, calling people. It mm-hmm. works fairly well. I literally just kind of kept my hands on the steering wheel and kept on talking. And most people I talked to didn't know I was using the watch. They couldn't really tell.
Yeah, the microphone and speakers seem to have been done really well. I used it once or twice for calls today. But one of the things I thought I noticed was that the speaker was so small, and obviously it only has a certain range of frequencies. I found it a little hard to decipher who I was speaking to in the phone. So, you know, like for example, I called the school at one point and I wasn't sure who had picked up from their voice because I couldn't just make out the intonation of their voice from that small speaker. So, I mean, obviously, if you're calling somebody's mobile phone, that's fine and you'll know who it is. But so in some situations like that, and the person wouldn't identify themselves because they assumed that I could tell who it was. I was kind of like, I'm going to just guess who you are and that'll be fine. And it was fine. So, yeah, but I think it's another useful way to interact with the watch.
The other thing I really liked, and I mentioned we went out of town this weekend, is the remote camera shutter. And so we were wanting to get a picture of like the whole group. And so we kind of rigged up my phone where it was like on top of a table, a good angle. And the remote camera shutter, I was able to like get us in the right spot. And there's a 3-second timer and it took.
Yeah. Yep.
So
kids were blown away today at school when I showed them that you could do that. That was a very popular feature when I was demonstrating it to some kids.
It's really, it should kind of corner the selfie stick market. No, I guess they still have their purpose. I mean, not really, but...
Well, there's going to be a specific grip, you know, if you imagine this, an overhand grip on the selfie stick as it points away from you, just so you can point your watch and you can actually subtly develop a technique for doing both those things at once. They're complementary, I think.
Yes. Before we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the night, the fine folks at Aerohive. They unleash the power of enterprise mobility. Aerohive's technology enables organizations of all sizes to use mobility to increase productivity, engage customers, and grow their businesses. Supporting over 13,000 enterprises worldwide, Aerohive's proprietary mobility platform takes advantage of the cloud and distributed architecture to deliver unified, intelligent, simplified, and cost-effective networks. Big news on the Aerohive front today is Dell is now reselling Aerohive. So that's, I know that the folks at Aerohive are extremely excited about that. And, you know, in terms of Apple Watch news, I did some client monitoring on my Apple Watch this morning. So, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but if you go to my Twitter feed from Monday the 27th, I think in the morning, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes, you can kind of get a feel for how the Apple Watch did on my Wi-Fi. It's kind of interesting. But again, thanks to Aerohive for sponsoring the show this week.
Okay, good stuff. So, question, Bradley, what's your favorite watch face?
I use only have one. I use the modular, mm-hmm. and I have the date top left, time top right, calendar in the middle, temperature bottom left, activity bottom middle, and then sunset sunrise bottom right. When I first got it, I put battery in the bottom right, but I'm trying to like get away from even caring about that and not just not even thinking about it. Like I'm assuming I'll charge it every night, and I'm assuming it'll make it the rest of the every day. So I don't even want to know about the battery.
Yeah, I've also disabled the battery glance. I've taken that off as well. I've put together a number of different combinations of the modular screen. I don't know whether I'll bother sticking with this, but it seems like feels a bit like the kind of overthinking you normally do when you get something new. But I set up a version of the modular screen for work and for weekends, and also one for travel. So the work one has a date in the top left, calendar across the middle, sunset, and then two time zones, Mountain Standard Time and Eastern Standard Time, your time zone, so I know what time it is with you. And that's kind of what I use for the working day. And then for weekends, I have the activity measurement, the weather, sunset, and a timer. So that's kind of, I use a timer at weekends for different things, making breakfast. Kids always want me to time them doing something or other, things like that. And then I also put together one for travel, just as a kind of exercise for what I might do. And that is one situation where I would put the battery monitor on the screen, because you don't always know when you can charge again. And if you can see, well, I'm sitting in the airport right now and I'm down to 40%, maybe I'll just take this downtime to juice up the watch so that it will last for the flight or whatever. So having the battery on the travel screen is a good idea. Local weather, date, sunset time, and time in my home time zone, which is obviously London time. So that's, I think I would use it probably differently when I travel than necessarily when I'm at work, for example. I think what would be cool, though, is if it was possible to have third-party access to some things on the watch face. So, for example, it would be really neat, I think, if I could see, my OmniFocus status, how many past due, how many due, and how many due soon on a watch face. I think that would be really nice. But I can see that coming in, some possibly quite a lot later version than right now. It's probably a hardware limitation as much as anything else. And also an API limitation, probably. I just haven't had time to think about opening up access to watch faces. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with that situation overall. I don't know if you've noticed this, Bradley, but when you demonstrate the Apple Watch to people, it seems to me that the watch faces really sell it. And I showed it to one of our science teachers, and I just showed her the solar system on the watch face. She was just like, "That's amazing. I've got to have an Apple Watch." And it was just that. I hadn't even shown her any apps yet or anything. She's like, "Oh, I had no idea you could do something like that." And then I showed her the apps, and she was like, and this is, I don't know if this is a common refrain I've heard from people I've shown the watch to, is, "I had no idea it could do so much." Now, a lot of people have said, "I thought you could do maybe two or three things." And let's face it, if you've watched the Apple marketing, you would know about exactly three things that it can do. But people haven't really appreciated the complexity and the richness of some of the other things you can do on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we've got to, as a tech community, I guess, is to remember that this is like the first iPhone.
Yeah.
And you see the potential. And there's a lot of things that the hardware has to catch up to, and then people have to, I guess, dream.
Yeah, I think design has to catch up to it as well. People have got to get simpler and faster, I think. I kind of like that people have tried ambitious things for version one of their Apple Watch, but I think people are going to learn very quickly that in no possible way is this a small iPhone. This is for a very fast access to very key features. And I don't know about you, but I would certainly trade off richness in an application for speed in almost any circumstance. I would say, if you can do these two things in 1 second, or you can do these eight things in 15 seconds, I'm going to take those two things as long as it's fast. Because in some ways, it's a wee bit like, in the early days of Siri, when you tried to be all fancy and use a really fast way to talk to your phone and it failed on you, you just felt like a complete idiot. And in some ways, the watch is a bit like that. When I'll just quickly check Twitter on my watch, and then you're standing there with your hand out for 15 seconds trying to get Twitter to load, you just feel like a complete idiot. So I really feel that speed is the number one feature that every watch application needs right now. And I have no doubt that there's plenty of low-hanging fruit that both the developers and, let's face it, Apple themselves can probably optimize in their software, even on the current hardware, to do a better job of that kind of performance.
Yeah, just take time. I think, you know, it's one of those things where the watch is a watch today.
Yep.
First, but 5 years from now, who knows? Where the phone was a phone when it started, but it's mm-hmm. a phone is an app today.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. Yep.
Before we move on, let's thank our second sponsor of the night, it's the fine folks at Shobee. Now, Shobee is an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobee, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads. And then they can provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly onto documents. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobee from thousands of compatible iPad apps or by completing assignments with Shobee's built-in tools. Shobee keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Now, Shobee Basic is 100% free. Teachers can try it out today on downloading it for the App Store, try it with their entire classroom for free. But if you love Shobee, you'll want to look at Shobee Pro. And they're offering a special deal for podcast listeners. Go to shobee.com/out of school. And if you buy 5 upgrades, you get 5 for free for a year. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes at shobee.com/out of school. One of the things it's not really even on the show notes, but I wanted to run down, we talked about this morning, was the Wi-Fi. So the 2.4 gigahertz band is old. Everybody hates it. It's dirty. There's only 3 channels that don't overlap, so it's very difficult. The problem with that is it's the desired band for Internet of Things devices. I kind of hate that name, but it's, mm-hmm. it is what it is. It's just things that get on the Internet that aren't computers. And I'll lump phones and iPads in there as well. Those are computers. Everything else is just devices. And 2.4 gigahertz, it travels through walls better, mm-hmm. and it uses less battery. And so that's why devices like the Apple Watch are 2.4 gigahertz only. So it's 802.11 in. I imagine it's a single stream radio. Like I would bet money it is. Mm-hmm. So when I got to work today, I opened up Hive Manager and went into the AP that I knew I was standing, like literally standing next to, and did not see my Apple Watch. So I thought, okay. I know my Apple Watch is paired via Bluetooth, and that's its desired communication to my phone. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I walked across the building, dropped my phone off, and then walked back, loaded up Hive Manager, and there's my watch. So it appears that it does drop off Wi-Fi. I imagine as a battery savings technique when mm-hmm. it's paired with your iPhone, because it assumes your iPhone has a Wi-Fi connection.
Which it must have, because otherwise a watch would never have had the Wi-Fi connection in the first place. Because right. there's no Wi-Fi configuration on the watch. It basically copies over whatever credentials you have on your phone onto the watch. So if the phone doesn't have access to the Wi-Fi network, the watch will never get access to that Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know I guess it's like iCloud keychain. I guess it's like the same way that, like it transfers if you get a new iPad and sign in mm-hmm. to iCloud, that it transfers all that.
Yeah, or it could just be simply copying the credentials directly over Bluetooth rather than going to the cloud for it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's certainly true. So yeah, that's kind of some neat Wi-Fi stuff. So it doesn't mm-hmm. appear that like you're going to see this like big crunch of Apple Watches that are on your 2.4 gigahertz band, because they're only going to be on Wi-Fi when they're away from its paired phone, mm-hmm. which for most people, their phone's going to be in their pocket most of the time.
Yeah, and certainly in a school, you know, the majority of people in your school are the students, right? So it's highly unlikely that they would leave their phone separately from their – more likely teachers would do that kind of thing. I found myself at one point today, I left my phone in my classroom, and I had gone just to the bathroom on the other side – it was on the other side of the building. And as I was walking back, nowhere near Bluetooth range, through massive thick stone walls in our school, I got a notification. So it seems to me that at least – and it wasn't just a text message, it was a Twitter notification. So it seems to me that at least some of the notification stuff will travel through Wi-Fi as well. I thought it had to just be Bluetooth. The help file is a wee bit vague on that, so I'm not exactly sure what can happen when. But it seems to me that for the most part, the experience, as long as you're on the same Wi-Fi, the experience is, you know, the same as being paired with the Bluetooth for many things.
Yeah, it's like almost things that like from Apple that are like cloud first things, like email, messages, things like that.
Yeah, those seem to be able to work. You know, say your phone was actually off, but your watch was on a known Wi-Fi network, you can still get messages on your watch. But my phone was on and on the Wi-Fi network, so it seems to be able to forward notifications through Wi-Fi as well as over Bluetooth, as far as I can tell.
Well, you can really see a day in the future where I can almost see it being in reverse, where your watch is the cellular device and it's sharing it with everything else because that's the device that's always on you.
It could be. Could be. I mean, the phone at the moment is sort of is rapidly becoming that brick of internet access that you carry in your pocket, and all you sort of radiate your own personal internet cloud around you to your laptop and your iPad and your phone and your watch and so on. So those worlds could reverse, but the phone, I think the phone has that advantage of being big enough to have a big battery, which is something the watch is never going to get, you know, absent some miracle. Graphene batteries or whatever, the watch is never going to have the battery power that you're going to want it to have.
So you got some notes here on, and I know you blogged about it, and we'll put that in the show notes, but PowerPoint in Keynote remotes.
Yeah, so this is something that I'm obviously interested in because I present quite a lot. I don't tend to use these things in the classroom. I tend to use them more when I'm out consulting with other schools and so on. But both PowerPoint and Keynote were updated with Apple Watch apps. And just to give you, this is obviously one of the kind of most obvious educational applications of the watch is using it as a remote control for PowerPoint and Keynote. And basically, the PowerPoint app is reasonably basic. So is the Keynote app for that matter, but the Keynote app is a little more rich than Switch, I'll explain. But the PowerPoint app simply controls PowerPoint running on your phone. So the idea there would be that you would connect your phone to your projector or an Apple TV and then start your PowerPoint presentation on the phone and then use the PowerPoint app on your Apple Watch to control it. And when you there's a button that starts the presentation, and then on the main screen you've got a forward and back button. And then if you force press, you get two options to restart and end the show. Now the PowerPoint app is quite nice in that it gives you an elapsed timer on the screen of your watch as you're presenting. The Keynote app doesn't do that. But that's the only way that you can set up the PowerPoint app is you've got to have the PowerPoint file on your phone, and your phone has to be the device that's essentially playing back the PowerPoint file. So far as I can tell, it works fine. It worked fine in my testing. I haven't tried it in a large range of different scenarios, so there might be some radio interference issues between the watch and the phone. I don't know, but so far so good. The Keynote app has a little more richness to it, and it's simpler in terms of the interface when you're presenting. But the Keynote remote app actually works in two different ways. So in the simplest way, it can work as a remote control for a Keynote presentation running on your phone, exactly the same as I've just described with the PowerPoint application. The way you get to that is you open Keynote on your phone, open up a Keynote presentation, and once the presentation is open on your phone, you get a play button on your watch. And then you start the presentation, control it with your watch, and then you can stop it again. I like the Keynote app a little better in that it only has one button for forward on the home screen, so you don't even have to look at it to target the right button. You just press the screen and your next slide will appear. If you want to go back, you have to force press on the Keynote app and then you get a back button and an end button, which is quite, I think that's a slightly better design because it reduces the possibility of you accidentally going back when you meant to go forward, which is a little bit embarrassing. There is, however, another way you can use the Keynote Watch app, which is you can use it as a remote for Keynote on your phone, which itself is acting as a remote control for Keynote on your iPad or your Mac. That sounds a bit complicated to say, so let me explain it again. You know how in times past you were able to use your phone as a remote control for Keynote on another device, such as an iPad or a Mac?
Yes.
Well, now you can do that same thing, but instead of having to touch your phone screen, you can use your watch to control the remote control function on your phone, which then controls the Keynote presentation running on your iPad or your Mac. And this is a way in which you can use the Watch app to control Keynote on your Mac. You obviously don't pair the watch directly with your Mac or with your iPad for that matter. So this is kind of a way to get to that situation. If you want to present off your Mac, let's say you've got, you know, crazy complex animations that, you know, are too slow on a phone or too slow on an iPad, you could use your phone as a remote control for your Mac and then use the watch to operate your phone. And the way you get into that mode, I was initially confused because it's not obvious how you switch into these modes. If you launch the Watch app while you're looking at the file picker on your phone, it will start the remote control function on your phone, which then tries to look for your Mac or your iPad to control. So the rule is, if you've got a file open on your phone, it will play that file. If you don't have a file open on your phone, it will try and remote control from your phone to another device. Does that make sense? It's kind of like Keynote Inception a little bit. But it seems to work in both modes reasonably well, too.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things, like, big presentation, will you trust it?
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, though, I have used the Keynote remote from my phone to my iPad. That's been my standard presentation setup for about 2 years now, and it has been absolutely rock solid. The only thing you have to do, in my opinion, the only thing to really make sure is to turn off Wi-Fi on both devices. And what happens then is that Keynote communicates over Bluetooth between the phone and the iPad. So, and that seems to be quite reliable, even in the face of other kinds of Wi-Fi problems in the venue, which typically happens in conferences because conferences. So that has been my standard presenting setup for about 2 years now. So I think what I will probably be doing from now on is just, you know, going for it on my phone, running Keynote on my phone, and then controlling it with the watch. And that would be, I think that would be pretty suitable for most situations. A couple of things to suggest, though, it's much more comfortable if you take the watch off rather than trying to, like, turn your wrist over and control your presentation on your wrist, which is also dead obvious and a bit annoying for your audience. Imagine you take your watch off and you sort of cradle it in your fingers the way, you know, you go to a jeweler's and you pick up a watch. The way you would do that, you'd slip three fingers through the band and hold it inside your hand to look at. If you do that with your Apple Watch while presenting, that will be a really comfortable way to hold it for the duration of your presentation. And secondly, it's going to be important to turn off wrist detection. Now, wrist detection is a feature on the Apple Watch where when it detects that it's come off your wrist, it locks it with its passcode, and then you have to enter the passcode again to get back into the watch. Obviously, you don't want to be doing that during your presentation, so it would be a good idea to disable that feature, particularly if you're going to take it off your wrist to hold it as a controller. And then secondly, you probably want to set it so that whenever the watch goes to sleep and reactivates, it goes back to the initial application, not to the watch face. Because you imagine, you know, you're talking for 5 minutes, the watch will go to sleep, and then when you wake it up again by tapping on the screen, you don't want to be seeing the watch screen and then having to go back into the apps and open up your remote control again. So that's a setting that you can actually change just on the watch, right, in settings general, and then the section is called activate on wrist raise, and you can choose whether it resumes to the watch or to the last application. You're going to want to set it to the last application so that it always comes back to your remote control before you start your presentation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's like a lot. And yeah. You know, Microsoft and Apple have kind of done two different, you know, kind of spectrums there. Mm-hmm. And they're both interesting. And I think, it'll be interesting to see, like, does the performance of one make you want to maybe use PowerPoint or use Keynote if you didn't before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't necessarily think that any of the features of those watch apps is going to sway you from using one or other application, but it's just interesting that Apple have packed a little bit more into their application. And I think that's probably because, you know, that's the only way you could sort of make this work for people who present from a Mac. I'm not terribly sure that I would want, you know, three hops of wireless in between my controller, or at least two hops of wireless between my controller and my presentation. Although, you know, most times when you're presenting, it's not the end of the world to try. You've all had controller failures at some point in our presenting careers. It's not the end of the world to just walk over and hit the space bar. So it's probably not too bad.
Yeah, as we discussed in class today, sometimes it's how you recover from those things is as important as it never breaking in the first place.
Yeah, that's the test of true presenter skill, is to not let Andy know that something went wrong.
Before we move on, let's thank our final sponsor tonight. It's the fine folks at Jamf Software. They provide IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in educational organizations. They have a great app called Casper Focus that allows teachers from their iPad to control their classroom experience. They can quickly gain a student's attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to their class, choose and distribute iBooks, and they can even initiate AirPlay. Learn more about Casper Focus by going to outofschool.net, and we have a special URL on show 130 to let the folks at Jamf know that you came to them from our show. So thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week. Casper Focus would be a great watch app.
Yes, it would. And that would be one where it would also be very critical not to be slow. So imagine you standing in front of a class going, come on, lock these iPads down. That would be something that would be important to be fast to as well.
This is completely random, but how have you organized your, like watch screen, like your app layout, because I find it very confusing. Like, you know, I organize it on my phone or on my phone, and it was like, oh, this looks good. And then you go to your watch and you see what's on like the initial screen, and it's like, no, I don't want those. Yep. But every time you move it, it like shifts other stuff around.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the process of organizing the Apple Watch screen is absolutely maddening, because apparently you can sort of leave gaps, but not really. It's kind of like a really buggy version of Candy Crush. What I've done is I've organized mine in basically kind of a wavy column of five apps across, you know, so two on either side of the watch face, and then stacks, rows of that above and below. And basically my sort of simple rule is above the watch is lifestyle applications and travel, and below the watch is sort of productivity and utilities. So below the watch face, I've got things like, you know, messages in the phone and email and the clock and the Keynote app and things. And then above, and OmniFocus and calendar and Evernote and things. And then above the watch face, I've got weather, day one, Instagram, Flipboard, Maps, Starbucks, Passbook, Uber, things like that. So that's kind of how I've organized it right now. And it seems to me that five apps is kind of like the width of the screen, if you like. So you can have, you sort of see three big ones and then two tiny ones on either side. It's almost like a five and a four. I can't quite explain exactly what it looks like, but maybe I'll tweet a picture of it later on. But I've tried to keep it quite narrow and tall rather than making it a massive hexagon of icons. But yeah, it's going to take a little bit of getting used to.
Yeah, this is probably the equivalent of having to only organize, like, remember when you can only organize your apps on the iPhone, and then you could start doing it through iTunes like years later. This is probably the equivalent of that.
You can actually organize the phone layout on the watch.
On the phone.
How long is it going to take us to get it straight when we're saying watch and phone? On the phone app, you can actually set the app layout. And that syncs live to your watch as well. So
yeah, but like it's what, so like what you want to do is have the layout live and like see, because what you, when you're editing it on your phone, you don't see like how it's going to look.
Exactly. You don't get the fisheye effect, the scaling on the edges. So that requires a little bit of tuning. I slightly suspect that I'm going to end up doing what the kids in school do with a lot of their iPad apps, is they actually organize them by color. So they have, you know, green icons over here and white icons over here and red ones over here. That may actually not be the most insane way to organize the Apple Watch as well.
That may not be bad. Yeah, it's kind of like, that's what they call a rat hole in the business. But yeah, that's just interesting things of, you know, and we've talked about this. For the first time since 2007, like, we really have a new platform. Like, even the iPad was kind of like iOS. Yep. This is a completely new thing. Like, this will probably not happen a lot of times in our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. No, this is absolutely not iOS, except in the sort of architectural sense that it's quite like iOS. But it's, in terms of user interface and interaction model, it is not the same thing as iOS at all. It is its own thing. And I think one of the sort of fundamental tools and one of the things that people will be desperate to get you to install is the Glance. Because I find myself, you know, for OmniFocus and Overcast and those key apps and the calendar, those three apps, I'm constantly using the Glance as a jumping off point to get into their app, as opposed to other apps that I don't necessarily use that often. Okay, I'll take the time to go into the home screen and get your app that way. But for the main apps, the Glance is absolutely crucial as a way to get into the app, and I think that's going to be very important going forward.
That was kind of a rat hole. But you know, another thing it would be good to see in the future is Chromecast remote. And of course, they do have an Apple TV remote app now. I've not used it yet, but there is a remote app, and I've heard it's very good though.
I haven't tried it either yet, but I will. What I'd like to see from YouTube is I'd like to see a YouTube app for the watch. Hear me out on this, right? Not to actually watch videos on your watch. But one of the things I do for teaching a lot is I have playlists on YouTube, and I have one called How the Internet Works. And it's basically all kinds of cool sort of 2 and 5 minute and 10 minute videos that I like to use in class every so often. And it would be really cool if I could just, you know, on my watch, just go and look at my playlists and just start something playing on my Chromecast from the watch. That would be a really cool thing to be able to do. today we were looking at how submarine cables are laid between different countries for the internet. And I had a video of a shark biting an undersea cable because the kids didn't believe me that they actually there were cables under the sea. So I was like, here's a shark biting one just so you believe me. and they did believe me. So that was a fun thing to do. Yeah.
What else you got? I was thinking about some, I was thinking of other things like ways, and this is more searching for solutions and searching for problems. Like, what are the ways would this be good for schools? And again, we talked about Casper Focus. Mm-hmm. I would love to see like a way to do Wi-Fi monitoring. Mm-hmm. Where like, I'm thinking like site survey stuff. So maybe it's even like an iPhone or an iPad in your bag that's just like you're just walking around with the watch and it's almost like showing you what it's seeing Wi-Fi wise. Like, show me what as you're walking through the hallway, show me what RSSI my phone has right now or my iPad has right now or my computers, things like that, where it's like a good site survey tool.
Mm-hmm. I can see other applications as well. We talked about Caster Focus as being one. The other one I kind of thought of, although I've said before I'm not in love with this idea, but like Class Dojo, where you can award your students like badges and stuff for certain things that they do. You can imagine a Class Dojo app where you could just really quickly scroll around the kids in your class, pick one, and then you're presented with a number of badges. Just making some kind of quick record of things that happened on the watch in the classroom, I think would be really useful for a lot of teachers too.
Yeah, I was even thinking something like attendance, or like, really mm-hmm. simplified way, like, again, to set to sync with your student information system. But, like, just, trying to think of ways that, we used to use the computer, we use the phone, like, what other ways mm-hmm. could it speed up things and make it, like, a more seamless interaction? But, yeah, I mean, it's fun to brainstorm about this because we've not gotten to do this in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm sure I'll think of more things as time goes on, but those are some of the ideas I have right now. I wanted just to wrap up, Bradley, with a quick discussion of data security considerations, because from a sort of systems administration point of view rather than just a teaching point of view, there are some things that you probably want to have a think about when thinking about the Apple Watch. And the first thing is, obviously, the watch can have a passcode. It sort of encourages you to set one of those up. And there are certain functions that you cannot have working on the watch unless you've got a passcode set up. Primarily amongst them is Apple Pay for those blessed countries which have Apple Pay at the moment. If you don't have a passcode set up, you can't use Apple Pay. It's as simple as that. The main security measure on the watch is locking it when it comes off your wrist. So it can detect whether or not it's touching your wrist. And when that contact is broken, the watch can be set to automatically lock itself and require that passcode again. You can turn that feature off, but it does disable certain other functions. It says in the app, the watch app, that there are some health monitoring features that are unavailable when that feature is turned off. But you might want to turn it off for certain purposes. There is also a configuration profile option for phones, which can force that to be on. So the wrist detection, it's called. And you can actually if you've got the latest Apple configurator, you can set a configuration profile that will force your employees to have that setting enabled for their Apple Watch. The watch can be set to do the same thing as iOS, where it will erase all its data after 10 failed attempts at the passcode. But there is no remote wipe capability for the watch. So there's no Find My Apple Watch, there's no remote wipe. There's, as far as I can see, no kind of activation lock process either. I don't even know if the watch gets activated or not. It's not. There's nothing obvious when you set it up that says, now activating your Apple Watch. So I don't even know whether the watch even contacts Apple's activation servers, but there's nothing I can see that forces the watch to, be bound to a specific Apple ID, except by pairing with the phone. So you might wonder, why does this matter? But there does appear to be some data cached on the watch, like actually on the storage in the watch. Messages, obviously the photos that you sync are actually synced to the device, some music, certain emails as well, and cached glance data as well. So if you look at a glance and you swipe up, you'll see that it has some information from the last time the glance was refreshed, which could potentially contain sensitive information if you had apps that would do something with school data or personnel data or something like that. So in principle, it's possible there might be some sensitive data on your watch, and that's really the way that you're going to secure that, is by putting on the 10 failed passcode attempts, turning on wrist detection, and that's about it, really.
Yeah, and these are like all things I'm sure over the next 6 months that like we will get more information about. Like, you know, what are the best practices here? Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have this stuff with iOS 1.
Yeah, no, it's certainly true, and it's good to have at least this much right now. I also don't have information at the moment about whether or not the information is encrypted at rest on the watch. On the iPhone for the most part is, but I don't know whether that's true in the watch or not. Possibly is, I don't know. But that's just something to bear in mind as you're thinking about people bringing Apple Watch into your school. Staff members who you've already got their phones enrolled in MDM, do you want to enforce that lock on wrist functionality, the wrist detection functionality as well?
Yeah, I know these like things are always a nightmare for sysadmins, but I think if we just like take a step back and think about all the new things that iOS has brought us, like it's worth in the short term having maybe a little bit of lack of knowledge about the security and mm-hmm. and hope that Apple has really learned the track record through the IBM partnership, through hardening iOS over the years on making these things where they can hopefully eventually fit in well, where they can be deployed by organizations if they wanted to. Now, we mm-hmm. laugh about that in schools, like, hey, we would never deploy Apple Watches, but I could see in healthcare absolutely being deployment. Yeah.
Or, you work in a warehouse or you work in anywhere where your job is mobile, highly mobile, is going to be a good case for deploying Apple Watch to a lot of people. Yeah.
A couple other things. Yeah, it's been a long show. I've been teaching a few weeks, so I had a few reflections I wanted to, and all the teachers in the audience are, I'm going to say, shaking their head. One of the things I've learned in my short time teaching is it is very important to be firm with the kids. And like to not that kids try to bully you around, but like mm-hmm. I let them know that this is my classroom. And so I don't baby the kids. Like kids be like, hey, I'm working on this. How do I spell this? Like I just tell them, like, I'm not spell check. Like figure it out. You are old enough now to know how to Google stuff. Like figure out how to spell stuff. And I think like that to me is like it sets me up well like for a firm foundation in mm-hmm. the classroom when I like know that like it's I have to take control of the classroom. It's my classroom and we're going to do basically what I say. Not that I'm like a dictator, but yeah, I'm not going to let the kids I'm not going to let the inmates run the asylum, I guess.
yeah, asylum might be the word sometimes. Couldn't agree more. You know, the foundation of a lot of good teaching is a good environment to get started with. And, if you have teachers who persistently let people be disruptive, then you're going to spend a lot of time just managing that situation rather than actually doing the teaching part. So, I couldn't agree more. I find that very important, too. Other teachers, it's a thing about, I feel it's about personality as well. Like there's some teachers who are very comfortable with a lot of kind of interaction in the classroom, different things. I mean, I'm comfortable with interaction, of course, but there's got to be a point where, and I have one particular class where they would just, blow you off topic every minute of the lesson if you let them. And what about this and what about that and what about this other irrelevant thing? And sometimes you just got to say, look, guys, no more questions, right? I'm going to say some things now. You're going to be quiet and just listen to me. And then we'll talk and then we'll do something else and we'll do whatever activity we've got set up for today or whatever. But at some point you've got to see, interactive education is great, but sometimes I know something, you don't know it, I'm going to say it, you're going to hear it. Okay, let's not have a conversation in between.
Right. You got to get through, class ends at some point, we got to get through the material.
Yeah. Yeah. They can smell weakness is the fundamental thing. They're like sharks in that respect. Hopefully your kids aren't chewing on undersea internet cables, though.
They are not.
Cool. I think that's a good show for tonight, Bradley. We've got there was one other thing to say. The Google Classroom updates. There are some new features came to Google Classroom, which I think are quite useful. Can you summarize them quickly for us?
Crap, I forgot about them.
Okay, I can summarize them.
Yeah, let me read them real quick. Crap, I totally forgot about this. it was collaborative teaching.
Yeah, so it's you can now have more than one teacher on the same class. And then there was something else about, the way it used to be was when you graded an assignment, you had to kind of finish all the grades before you could hand it back to the kids. And now you can sort of do it all in one go. So you can do some grades And then save them and then come back like next day and do some more grades and then hand it all back to the class at once. Because previously you sort of had to, say I'd marked 5 out of 10, let's say I had to hand back those 5 and then I had to hand back the other 5 later. And sometimes that was confusing to kids. Well, how come half the class have got their mark back and we haven't got our mark back? And the answer was just, well, because Google Classroom made me send you those 5 back as soon as I'd done them. So you can now sort of save them and send it all back in one go. And the final thing you can do, which is really cool, this has also been in iTunes U for a while, is when you create an assignment or a post, you can save it as a draft. And then you can send it out closer to the time that you want to do it. Still doesn't have scheduled posting, which I think is also something that I've really wanted in iTunes U for like 3 years now. I can make a post, but I have to then manually push the post button at the time I want it to go out, which is not great if you're doing that and you're traveling in another time zone and you want to send it out. You've got to get up at 3 a.m. in San Francisco just to get your post out at the right time for your class. So, yeah, solid updates for Google Classroom. Loving that it's continuing to evolve. I have some more things to say about Classroom, maybe in another show, but it's nice to have a competitor to iTunes U.
Well, the two-teacher Classroom is one of those things that you don't think about often, but when you need it, you desperately need that. And we have that a lot here, where like we have one teacher that'll teach the entire fifth-grade science for all 3 homerooms. Mm-hmm. As they just kind of divide up the subjects and allows them kind of more in-depth lesson planning time. Well, but they're still in their homeroom, so they're still going to have to talk about the grades with the parents. And so both teachers need to be able to see all the information.
Yeah, yeah. And there's other reasons why that might be the case as well. You know, you might have a learning support teacher who comes into a classroom and, you know, works with maybe 4 or 5 pupils in the class. They need to have access to some of the material as well, different things like that. So, yeah, it's something that is necessary. And it's sort of increasingly necessary, I think, as schools try and integrate more additional needs into the mainstream classroom, that more specialists will be coming into classrooms over time. And that's just the way it's going to be. So software's got to support it.
Yes, that's true. Well, it's like the high-hanging fruit. Like you've got to go after that stuff to get more and more people to use it, because it's got to meet those needs.
Yeah, you know, and those can be, the lack of those features are showstoppers. You know, if I have 2 teachers, you know, in the early days of iTunes U, we were doing things like making another Apple ID to share between 2 teachers so they could all both get onto one course and things like that. So now that you can have additional instructors, it's very, very useful.
So, okay, well, I guess that's a great place to wrap up this week. So we've got a lot of watch news, and we'll continue to kind of think through that. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll see some more. It'll be fun to watch the App Store as updates come along over the next few months.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how developers improve their apps or, you know, in some cases probably rethink them quite substantially now that they've actually got their own watches to try them out on. Because in some cases the loading time is intolerable, you know, and I think that's something that everybody has to work very hard on, is to get those apps flashing up as quick as possible on the watch. So work on that, guys.
Yeah, and Apple, work on your application organization.
Yeah, that's got to be a more fun game of Tetris than it is at the moment.
So I am on the web at chambersdaily.com, Bradley Chambers on Twitter.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web, where I actually have written things recently, so it's maybe worth going back and checking that out now.
So have a good week, everybody.